All right, viewers, we're back. This is our second episode of a three-part series where Dave and I are answering.
I can't hear you.
Live the questions that we received during a recent webinar we did on Hyper-V 2016.
Is your camera on?
We're live, Dave.
I can't see you.
Open your eyes.
Oh, sorry. My Skype window wasn't open. Okay, apparently we are live.
Skype 101, how to make a video call. Apparently Dave should search the Channel 9 archives for that.
Hey, you know what? I'm still learning, all right?
Take it easy. As we all should be.
Take it easy.
Constant incremental improvement.
All right, Clint, you do the introductions this time.
Yay. So my name is Clint Wyckoff, and I am joined by fellow Microsoft MVP, David Kuula. David hails from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Is that how you say it?
My name is actually pronounced David.
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 Mm-hmm.
All right. So what are we here to talk about, Dave?
We are here to talk about an amazing subject. Near and dear to my heart.
Hyper-V.
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 Hyper-V. So, Clint and I were lucky enough to do a webinar this past week where we were chatting to people around the globe about all the amazing new features of Hyper-V and Windows Server 2016. And we had such amazing feedback during the webinar and so many questions that came through. We had, how many questions did we have, Clint, over the course of three webinars?
I mean, we were close to, I don't know, 75?
Oh, it was a ton. So what we've done is we've picked some of our favorite questions that we had out of that list. And we decided to do kind of a live episode where we would chat about those because a lot of them are really relevant for a lot of your environments, our viewers that are out there today. And you know what, Clint? We have a lot of viewers.
When we first started
Interview with an MVP, we had one viewer. And then we had 10 viewers. And then we had 1,000. And that was just because I was pressing refresh so many times on the browser. And so now we have over 100,000. So either we actually have real people that are watching us, or my finger's getting sore from hitting the refresh button 100,000 times.
Awesome. That's too funny. So why don't we jump right into it?
All right. So the first question that we have, Clint, is a really good one, actually. And it's, does Hyper-V have knowledge of what I/O it has available to it? And can it handle things like bursting of I/O, allowing a certain machine X number of resources for a certain amount of time and kind of preventing a Hyper-V cluster from overloading itself from a storage and I/O perspective? So yep. Is that even possible?
Well, again, you know, it's a unique technology, right? So today the answer to that is indirectly yes, indirectly no. So in Server 2012 R2, you know, Microsoft introduced some storage quality of service concepts that allow you to assign quality of service on a per virtual hard disk level, right? It didn't follow around the cluster. It wasn't policy driven. So some of the new things that are coming in Server 2016, Hyper-V 2016, single instance and multi-instance quality of service that allow you to dedicate minimum and maximum thresholds either against, you know, a single set of virtual machines, you know, so if I had a group of 5 VMs that I wanted to guarantee, you know, 500 IOPS maximum to 500, each one of those VMs would get 100 IOPS apiece, right? 5 times 100, 500. Multi-instance policy would give each one of those VMs 500 individually. So each virtual machine would be guaranteed. And the storage array and the scale-out file server that or the cluster where your virtual machines are running, kind of manages and brokers the performance required that each virtual machine needs and gets.
So you have a lot of experience having worked for some storage companies in a previous life, right, Clint?
Yep.
Have you started to see that the storage manufacturers have actually taken this and amped this up as well and started to include some of these technologies into their own arrays? So So it's great that Microsoft is doing this. I love this feature. This is actually one of my favorite features. The storage quality of service in Windows Server 2016 is amazing. But from an industry perspective, have you found that the storage vendors have started to do this natively in the arrays as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not uncommon to see both, you know, a hypervisor vendor as well as, you know, a storage vendor to introduce the same types of technologies, right? First, you know, the one that sticks out in my mind, you know, thin provisioning of disks. You know, yes, you can thin provision at a virtual hard disk level, and you can also thin provision on the storage infrastructure, the array level, right? Quality of service is no different. And, you know, some of the more modern storage arrays that are out there focus on, you know, managing at a per VM level and allowing you to dedicate, you know, individual virtual machines quality of service, dedicated I/O latency levels.
Awesome. All right, should we take the next question here?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the next question that that the viewers came in with is around dynamic RAM. And what if your server's maxed out on 8 gigabytes of dynamic RAM and you need to free up? Is Hyper-V intelligent enough to do this?
Well, it is now with Server 2016 Hyper-V. So if we need to adjust RAM, we can actually deallocate RAM live and hot inside of a virtual machine. And so we can size our RAM up and down, both dynamic and static memory. Very, very cool new features that you have inside of Server 2016. So the answer is yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yes, absolutely you can. But what if the viewers, you know, are potentially a VMware guy? He doesn't know what dynamic memory is. What is dynamic memory?
Dynamic memory is a configuration in Hyper-V where we can share the memory resources amongst our guest virtual machines. And there is a dynamic memory allocator resource that will actually adjust the RAM on the fly based on demand. Now, unlike VMware, where you can overcommit your memory, with Microsoft Hyper-V, you're maxed out at whatever your physical RAM is. You can never go above what your physical RAM is. So there is a distinct difference there. And, All right. Next question was going back to NanoServer. And the question was actually a really good one. I like this one. So are swap or page files a thing of the past with NanoServer?
Yeah, we've talked about Nano quite a bit, so, you know, check out some of the other sessions that Dave and I have done, even the previous Q&A session, you know, part one of this three-part series that we're doing. We talk about Nano as well as some of the other individual sessions that we've done here on Interview with an MVP. But to directly answer this question, you know, page files are a thing of Windows. You know, they're not going anywhere. So the answer to this question is no. You know, page files, swap files, you know, they're definitely not a thing of the past with Nano.
Awesome. All right. The next topic. Well, this is a good one because, you know, having, you know, in your role with Veeam, you get a bit of insight as a backup vendor, Clint. And I don't normally shy away from, you know, vendor type questions, especially in a forum like this, because they're very relevant. And this question was, is Veeam going to have any foreseeable support for any other hypervisors? Because right now you guys support VMware, you support Hyper-V.
Yep.
Anything in the roadmap right now for OpenStack, KVM?
Yeah,
other hypervisors?
The other hypervisor question is something that we definitely do get asked. And especially, you know, in my role going and being in a global position that I get to go around and chat with customers, partners, large events and things of that nature, you know, we get to ask these questions very frequently. And Veeam, you know, is always evaluating the market to see what the most popular trends and things are out there in the industry. And, you know, Hyper-V as well as vSphere have been widely adopted hypervisor platforms across the world. They're the two most leading that are implemented. So, I mean, I don't want to say never because those decisions are made above my pay grade. But definitely we are constantly evaluating to see what's going on out there. So if OpenStack is something that you are using to, you know, run KVM, for instance, right, if that's the hypervisor of choice that you use in your environment, let us know, because we need to have visibility in that to make sure that we're investing the right resources. And especially, you know, as the organizations start to go down and use more OpenStack-style technologies, you know, Docker, you know, containers, object-based storage is a great example, right? Let us know. That way we can, you know, make sure that we're meeting the needs of your always-on business. So that's that.
Awesome. Next question. There was a funny question that we had. Somebody asked a question in the webinar about use cases of Nano on Raspberry Pi devices. Now, personally, I don't really know how or why you would want to do that, but...
Because you could, because it's cool, man. Raspberry Pi.
If you can figure it out, let us know. Somebody commented in there, and I just thought that was an interesting angle to be heading down to look at loading up on a device like that. So
absolutely,
I've never tried, but if you guys try and you figure this out, we have a comment section inside the video. Let us know. I'm curious to see where exactly that takes you. So
fellow MVP, you know, Sean Kearney, who is the Energized Tech on Twitter, and he's done a lot of PowerShell scripting with the scripting guys and stuff.
Isn't he an honorary scripting guy?
He is. He's regularly posting on behalf of them. Yeah, it's awesome. But he's done a lot of advanced PowerShell scripting and deployments with NanoServer. So maybe that'd be something we could throw over his way.
No, it would be great, Clint, is if we could get the Energized Tech on, you know, one of these sessions that we do. That would be amazing.
The only way I would do it is if he brought along PowerShell Polly.
PowerShell Polly, and he had to drink some Red Bull before he talked to us.
He might have a seizure and fall off his chair.
if you've ever heard Sean talk, coffee and any caffeine are a no-no before he talks, because he tends to talk very quickly when he's caffeinated.
Extremely quickly. So next topic, David, let's jump down here. And I see one that sticks out in my mind, and it's a super popular topic, Azure Stack.
Azure Stack.
The Azure Stack, currently in technical preview 1, soon be preview 2?
Yes, like everything, there's going to be, it'll come out sometime. Now, here's my crystal ball, same one that you had last time.
Yeah.
I really wish I had the dates on this. Clinton and I actually had the pleasure of doing some significant some kind of beta pilot testing on the Azure Stack technical preview 1. I think our very first conference that we delivered a session that included Azure Stack content was back at Tech Mentor in Las Vegas in March of this year, 2016. And I was actually really impressed with, you know, the desired state, the DSC configurations.
Yep, PowerShell DSC, the resiliency. Yeah, man, that is solid. So, I mean, if you're not familiar with what Azure Stack is, it is kind of the evolution or use the predecessor, I guess, would have been Windows Azure Pack that has evolved into Azure Stack. And what that is the exact same Azure experience that you can deploy in your own hybrid cloud environment, in your own data center. So you can offer infrastructure as a service, deployment as a service, code as a service, whatever you want to your development teams and your business owners. So Dave and I actually did a sample deployment of Azure Stack where it uses the PowerShell desired state configuration. What was the coolest part of that we found?
The coolest part that I found was that out of box, the resiliency for the build, we were actually turning on and off the build server live during the demo. We would turn it back on. It would resume step 147 of 180 or whatever it was.
Pick right back
and
up. Yep.
The second coolest thing was the Azure AD integration and us being able to link our, you know, live accounts right into there to have credentials to log in and be able to share that in a multi-tenant experience. And that just worked. All of that stuff just worked out of box.
And we were actually doing it nested. So we had a physical Hyper-V 2016 node where we were nesting virtual machines inside of that were hosting Azure Stack. We were like three layers deep, which made troubleshooting maybe a little bit more complex, but.
And it performed all right. We got a build. Yeah. It was building in a couple hours. It was great. It was actually completing by the time we were done our session. So.
Yeah. So we started the build at the beginning of that, the Azure Stack build at the beginning of the Tech Mentor workshop. It was a 4-hour workshop that Dave and I were doing. And then we kind of wrapped it up. So Azure Stack, we don't know when TP2 is going to be out, but I would just venture to say that it will be eventually and soon.
Absolutely.
Let us see here.
Next one here that I've got is, are there any caveats that are known for upgrading to Windows Server 2016 at this time?
Well, first of all, I don't know what a caveat is. I know what a caveat is, but I don't know what a caveat is.
Listen, don't hammer me on my Canadian English, all right? It's spelled C-E-H, okay? Okay. So the only ones that I really know of is that when you're introducing Server 2016 nodes like TP4 or TP5 into an existing 2012 R2 cluster, you're stuck running in a mixed mode configuration until you get all of the 2012 R2 nodes upgraded. And the second thing is you can't take advantage of all of the new features of 2016 until you get all the integration services upgraded to, I think it's version 5 is 2012 and version 6 is 2016. So until you're on all version 6 and everything's all upgraded. And the big piece that was a one-way street in there is that once you take and you convert your cluster functional level to 2016, you can't really go back. And once you upgrade those integration services from version 5 to 6, you can't go back. So,
The VM hardware version, right? And it requires a reboot, and it's all done via PowerShell.
Yeah.
It's a really simple one-line command, update-VM version.
Yeah, it's a pretty big upgrade. So having one reboot in there for me is not really the end of the world. You're
typically, you know,
forklifting
Folks would do this during, you know, a patch Tuesday, a patch cycle, or a maintenance window. And again, you definitely want to test, you know, making sure that it doesn't break anything in your environment.
Absolutely. One more question?
Yeah. So
how about this one? This one here was actually a really good one, Clint. I like this one. Which version of Microsoft Server is recommended for Hyper-V on Server 2016, GUI, Core, or Nano, to be fully compatible with EMC PowerPath and similar storage-based DSMs? I don't remember what the acronym for DSMs are, but basically it's the multipath software that you would load for your storage array.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I guess the general recommendation is – and I know I've said it probably about 15 times over the course of the videos that we've done together, maybe more than that, but test, check with the vendor to see what supported. Do they support Core? Do they support Nano? Nano is extremely different, right? Yep. There's no MSI support. There's no EXE support. The vendor, your application vendors are going to have to rewrite their entire code base to be deployed on the AppX deployment methodologies and format. So it would require some recoding on their behalf. So that's why we generally recommend to checking with the vendor to see what's best, what's supported. I would venture to say that EMC Core is the least supported. It's been around for, you know, years now. So
I would say that Nano is going to be challenging out of the gate for these vendors just because of the fact that it has so many different fundamental architectural changes inside of it. You can't just take that native installer and pop it on there and expect it to work.
Yeah, a lot of the Windows Server binaries don't even exist, right?
Exactly. So they're going to have to do some major rewrites. So from my experience, what I've seen in the past, when something like Nano goes live, when Server 2016 goes live, you're probably going to be having the vendors lag behind a little bit as they're trying to figure out, you know, support and use cases around that. Now, Nano in a nested scenario. So if we have nested instances of Nano servers that are running on top of Hyper-V, those will work out of box, but they're not requiring any of those third-party drivers to be loaded inside.
Right.
Or applications. Perfect.
Cool.
Well, folks, thank you for joining us. Clint, any wrap-up thoughts?
No, check out part 3. More questions coming. A lot more. Good stuff.
Awesome. Okay, thanks a lot, guys. And as always, if you like our show, make sure that you let us know. We've got a comments field inside of our Channel 9 videos. And, you know, let us know your feedback. We really appreciate everything coming back from you guys, the viewers. Thanks a lot.